Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Matty B. And it's already off the chain with the Michigan and the Big Ten thing. So I'm going to kick off just with that. I feel like we've been talking about it for so long that I can't remember last week. I didn't think Jim Harbaugh was going to be suspended, but the Big Ten waited until he was on the plane to State College. They informed ESPN first and the media partners 30 minutes before Michigan found out. Jim Harbaugh himself found out because someone showed him the social media post on his phone as he was like getting off the plane. So already an entire shit show. So much that I've seen people say that it's just a rumor, but according to news reports, like the Board of Regents are actively discussing leaving the Big Ten because it seems like there's just an attack on Michigan. And if you're like, people are saying like, well, it's a business thing. Like they cheated they're trying to get out of it by leaving the Big Ten. But the NCAA hasn't even given any notice of allegations or anything yet. So the fact that the Big Ten just came in and punished Harbaugh and the program for what seems to be just still Connor Stallions. I see a lot of Buckeyes. So what I did this past weekend, after Michigan won, I was able to just relax, right? They beat Penn State. I'll get to that in a second. And I'm like, I'm going to read what other programs in the Big Ten. So I went through like all their boards on like 24/7 and Rivals and stuff just to see if they were even talking about Michigan. And most of them weren't, surprisingly. There was like one or two snide remarks like, we'll see if they get their wins vacated, or funny that Harbaugh is still suspended again. But nothing real substantial like ready to hang him. But one thing that I noticed that was weird is there were like three Ohio State posters that were signed up on every site and were copying and pasting like the same talking points that someone inside the program leaked the information out, and it shows that Jim Harbaugh knows. But the NCAA already said that Harbaugh has no connection to what Stallions was doing. Even his brother, John Harbaugh, came out today and said that to his knowledge, they already went through all the phones and say that Jim Harbaugh's in the clear. So for them to suspend him, because remember, it's not the NCAA, it's just the Big Ten doing it. It seems like it's personal. And it makes me wonder, like, is it just a Michigan thing or is it just a Harbaugh thing? Because like the Big Ten, remember when they made up that penalty, intent to deceive or whatever? And then when Harbaugh first started coaching, they would constantly give sideline warnings. Maybe he was in the field. It's hard to tell on TV. But like it was always like Harbaugh's getting this, or every time Michigan would play, they would be like the most penalized team. Finally, this year, they're the least penalized. And that's what I was worried going into the Penn State game. And what do you know? At the beginning of the game, Michigan was getting called for every penalty. Even Penn State's touchdown drive, there was that defensive pass interference where it looked like Michigan's guy broke on the ball and the ball was just poorly thrown. Like it wasn't catchable, and they still called pass interference. What was the other one? There's like another hold or whatever. Like they tackled our guy on the touchdown run and didn't call the penalty. And then at the end of the game, it was almost like the Big Ten refs were like, we're going to try to keep Penn State in this. And when they realized that Michigan was just running the ball and pounding them, then they called a few penalties on Penn State to kind of even it out, and that was it. Like, it was almost like, hey, we're going to call all the penalties on Michigan at the beginning of the game to see if maybe Penn State can pull it off. And then they evened it out at the end when the game was out of reach. But that's more of like a conspiracy thing. I thought it was going to be more blatant. Like when 2016, when like the refs were patting Ohio State players on the ass. Like that's a real thing that happened. Like the guy that ref the game was supposed to never ref an Ohio State Michigan game because he was a fan of Ohio State. How they let that happen, I don't know. But the way they're going after Harbaugh now makes me just wonder, is the Big Ten just out to get Michigan? Three of the four members that rolled on the penalty for Harbaugh are from Penn State or Ohio State, which have a vested interest in Harbaugh not coaching, right? Because if Penn State would have won, they would probably be on track to make the playoffs.
Well, clearly, in hindsight, they should have let Harbaugh coach, and he would have just choked the game away.
Actually,
to the assistants, and they're like, no, all we're going to do is just power run it right down their face.
No, what would have happened would have been better is if they just suspended Franklin, right? Because he's the one that lost them the game. I actually, the one thing that I see, and I've talked to some Penn State fans, and they're like, I've been hearing from them for the past 3 years that, well, you can clearly see that Penn State's the better team. And I'm like, did you watch the same game that I watched? Like, Michigan ran that game like they were playing Rutgers. Like, they had no respect for Penn State. What they did was more embarrassing to Penn State than even passing the ball. Like, JJ was 7 for 8. If they wanted to pass the ball, they could have. And Penn State's, it was almost like Penn State kept talking about their number one defense, rushing defense, their number two, whatever the hell it was. And Manny Diaz, did you see that video he put out where he was giving fake signals to the student section to be loud on third down? Because he did it, and then when Blake Corum scored, he did the same signals, which I thought was funny. Because, like, the players see that crap, and they're going to get fired up. JJ did binoculars after the one touchdown. And it's like, yeah, if Penn State's going to be talking trash, then you have to back it up. But for people that are saying, like, they ran 30 times in a row, they did throw that one pass that was a pass interference. And, I mean, honestly, I thought JJ could have ran it. The announcer said that the crossing route was open, so he took the deep shot. It worked because then Penn State loosened up even more. I just don't understand how Penn State can be like, well, Michigan has the entire guys out here. They have like 3 tight ends, but yet we're going to still play our base package defense and just get blown off the ball. Because it was almost like I told you, like, should I be stressed out about this game? And Penn State's making no adjustments. And I'm like, Michigan has their goal line offense out here. What are they doing? No wonder they're running for 5 yards a pop or whatever. I think Michigan ended up running for like almost 6 yards a carry against the number one or number two rush defense in the country. Like, if you look at the stats, Penn State was like, Maryland had like negative 49 yards rushing or whatever. Michigan ran for like 200 something. And their drive, they were going slow. Their one drive took 8 minutes. Penn State had no chance. In fact, I text you when Michigan scored the second touchdown to go up 14-3 because I thought, well, this game's over. And even when Penn State scored, I still, in my gut, I still felt like there's no way Michigan's going to lose this game because everything had to go right for Penn State. They got the penalty. They went for it on a couple fourth downs. And I thought, if they're already going for it on fourth down, they already lost the game. And then they went for two. And then they asked Franklin, like, why did you go for two? And he was like, that's what the analytics say. The analytics never say to go for two in the second quarter. Like, I don't care who you are. I'm an analytics guy. They never tell you to go there because Penn State was getting the ball after halftime. If they would have scored a touchdown, because you're going to think that your offense is going to come out in the second half, you make adjustments, you're going to drive down and score, right? And then you're going to be up 3 points. If you go for two, you're up 4 points. But what's the difference? Right? Because if you miss it, then you're down 4 and you're chasing points the rest of the game, which is what happened. And then I didn't agree with the Penn State reporters because, like, after the game, they were so hounding Franklin on going for two with like a minute left instead of going kicking the field goal and then trying the onside kick. But I agree with Franklin. Like, you're gonna get the onside kick, or you're gonna have to go for two no matter what, whether you get the onside kick or not. If you don't get the 2-point conversion, the game's over. Like, why put your guys through meaningful reps that could injure them? Again, like, what, there's going to be no difference because they didn't get the onside kick anyway. So the game would have been over. But, like, you know, if you have a chance, if you get for two, you have to have a good feeling your offense just scored. So you kind of have the momentum. You don't know. What if the game tying touchdown is a Hail Mary? Then you have to calm your guys down and go for two. Like, I like the situation to go for two there, but I was kind of worried about Franklin because he couldn't understand the question and he couldn't explain why he went for two there. Because I felt like all he had to say was, look, we had to go for two either way. We just drove down the field and scored. I thought our offense was hot and we had momentum, and that was our best chance to get the 2-point conversion instead of hope maybe getting it after a Hail Mary or something where our team might not be focused. Right? Go for it there. Like, answer the question. And then you didn't get the onside kick. Like, they were trying to say, like, well, now you have to go for two onside kicks. Like, no. You would have got the one. And then it would have just been like them missing the 2-point conversion. Again, they missed both 2-point conversions. It wasn't like the offense was ready. But They fired their OC. Was that really the problem? I don't know. Their offense looks the exact same to me every year. Right? I don't care who the OC is. Like, they're talking about bringing back Moorhead. Like, oh, man, remember when we had Moorhead? It's like, no, you had Saquon Barkley. That's the difference. Like, Kenneth Grant, Michigan's defensive nose tackle, 300-something pounds, like 350 pounds, Matt. He ran down Penn State's running back on what should have been a touchdown. I sent you the clip because that was the play of the game to me. When he ran him down, I thought that was it right there. The game probably would have opened up. Penn State would have scored. So Michigan would have had to answer. They probably would have had to start throwing it. Penn State was getting pressure with their pass rush. Chop Robinson looks awesome. Probably be a first-round draft pick, right? If not top 10. Because, like, Michigan couldn't block him. And then they're like, you know, we're not just going to take him out of the game by running right at him. And they didn't do anything. But when Kenneth Grant ran down, I don't know if it was Catron or which one it was, but ran him down from behind. It was like a bear chasing down a deer. He just, like, enveloped him. Because you said it almost looked like a horse collar. He grabbed his shoulder pad with a bear paw. Because I zoomed in to see if he actually did. No, he didn't horse collar him. He grabbed the shoulder pad while he's running full speed and threw him down like a dad would throw down their child running away from him at, like, Disney World. That's what it looked like. I thought, man, how could you even say anything? Because he wasn't going to score a touchdown anyway, because Will Johnson, our five-star cornerback, was running down. What was he doing? He was running down him anyway. I mean, he's a five-star. That was one of the things that annoyed me, too, is, like, a lot of Penn State, their comments from, like, their insiders or whatever is like, there's no way Michigan wins. It's not like they have Charles Woodson on their defense like 1997, which was the last time I think they're both ranked in like the top 10 in Happy Valley, maybe, because I saw that reference a lot. And I'm like, Will Johnson's a pretty good quarterback. He might not be returning punts and stuff like Charles Woodson, but he's pretty much a lockdown. And guess what? He did lock him down. They couldn't pass worth shit. So it's like, all right. I feel like they haven't watched any Michigan games because I kept hearing about, like, Michigan's not, they're just pouring it on and embarrassing teams. Michigan hasn't, their first team has barely played in the fourth quarter. And how did they get around it? Running the clock. Because that was my concern, Matt. I said, what if Michigan gets tired in the fourth quarter because the guys haven't played? Oh, let's just take an 8-minute drive of just running the ball. And then do whatever. Penn State was desperate the whole game, though. They went for it on 4th and 6 from their 30. Why are you doing that? Like, your defense is awesome. And all you have to do is just bring in some goal line defense packages. What are you doing? Like, Michigan's going to beat you running the clock out anyway. What is the difference? That's the one thing that I just don't get. It's like, Manny Diaz made no adjustments. Now there's rumors after Yolich, or however you pronounce his name, got fired, that he's looking for another head coaching job anyway, so he wants out. I saw some Penn State people saying that they should just buy out James Franklin and then promote Manny Diaz. Like, Manny Diaz was awesome head coach last time he was head coach, right? How would that solve their problem? He just did no adjustments against Michigan and let them run all over him. You want him to be the head coach now? Like, I just don't get it. I don't get it. Penn State, all they have to do, honestly, if I'm a Penn State fan, I think you stay the course and you're probably going to be in the playoffs every year, or at least every couple years, right? When they expand, because you've been top 10 for how many years, it seems like. I look back and I was actually surprised that they weren't top 10 as much as I remember, but I think they've had 4 seasons the last couple years since Franklin's been the head coach, maybe 5 this year. So about half the time they're going to be in the playoffs. And I mean, that's good. Some teams can't even get bowl eligible. Look at Miami. You don't think they would want to be in the playoffs 5 years out of 10? That's my one thing. So let's just get right into the Miami Florida State game, because, man, that guy got his arm broke. That might've been the most disgusting thing I've seen. And I don't even think the replay guy wanted to look at that play. So they just gave him the first down, right? Because he put his arm out, stretching for the first down. And I don't know if he had both arms out, because I thought they said that it was his left arm that was broken, which what it, like, he was, the way he was stretching, like, he landed, like, right on it. It was disgusting. And they, like, they, you could tell the announcers were, like, kind of uncomfortable, because they were, like, they needed to show the replay to see if he got the first down. And they're like, well, we're going to kind of look at this. But they didn't zoom in like they normally do, because they were like, his arm, like, that's a compound fracture. You could see him kicking.
Yeah.
And they immediately brought out the air cast. And I thought him going out pretty much defeated Miami. I saw, was it your boy Danny Cannell or whatever? Wasn't he the guy? He said that was the most impressive win of the weekend. Like, beating Miami is not an impressive win. I don't care who you are.
Well, I mean, right. Here's the deal. It's one of your rivalry games. So it doesn't matter. Like, there's still, with where you're at, you're always going to get, especially with the position that Florida State's in, they're going to get the best punch from everyone. Just like the way Michigan's playing games in the Big Ten. Like, there's not going to be a quote, easy win for them, because you're going to be having, the other team is going to be trying to prepare to, their season becomes, if we can knock them out of the playoffs, if we can give them that loss, that then they don't get to go to the playoffs. That's their whole season.
I don't care if that's a rivalry game. It was a close game. The most impressive win was Georgia kicking the crap out of an Ole Miss team that, if they win, most likely had the best chance to kind of back into the playoff. Because they didn't have to play in the championship game. Alabama already has it locked up. They beat them 52-17. Like, Lane Kiffin, if you're honest about Lane Kiffin's career, why wouldn't he just take the A&M job? Right? Ole Miss isn't getting it done. There's no, like, at least at A&M, they're paying you, or they're paying for top five recruiting classes every year. You're already winning at Ole Miss. That's what they want you to do at A&M. And he's doing it with less recruits. So if I'm A&M, my first call is to Lane Kiffin. Do you agree?
Oh, boy.
Actually, let's be honest. My first call is to Urban. We got to get my boy in there. You got to get Urban on the phone. And for people that aren't aware, Texas A&M paid a ridiculous buyout, $76 million to fire Jimbo Fisher. I noticed.
Did you hear how that went down?
Because, go ahead and give us that rundown.
So, I don't know how accurate this is, but supposedly their 12th man alumni group presented a check at halftime of their game of like $156 million or $126 million. And it was already decided before the game they were firing Jimbo Fisher. So even though A&M won their game pretty convincingly Saturday, they presented this check at halftime. Like, look at all this money that we have. That's like, we're buying your ass out and you're done.
Well, I was waiting for that to happen. And I don't know why they waited so long. I think the thing that really pushed them over the edge, and I was kind of disappointed that no one put Mel Tucker's buyout on the comparison charts, because they made it seem like Jimbo Fisher's the biggest buyout of head coaches. Like, no, Mel Tucker's was like $80 million, and he might not get it. They're still fighting it, but like, that's the buyout that they're on the hook for. He tops Jimbo Fisher, and I think Michigan State is up for a head coach right now. And A&M's probably like, do we want to miss a coach possibly going to A&M? Because it seems like Michigan State's really been trying to get Urban Meyer to come. And if you're A&M, he's the biggest chip on the table. I saw someone joking like that they should call John Gruden and Urban Meyer and get the coaching cycles out of the way first. And I'm like, yeah, but Urban Meyer is available. You're giving him a number one recruiting class, basically, if he comes to A&M. You're giving him a 12-team playoff, so the stress isn't going to be as high. Like, you're firing Jimbo right before the 12-team playoff. Now, whether that's something that they had planned because of the record this year or whatever, but he had just won a game. Like, he just killed Mississippi State. They'd also fired their coach. So I don't know. Personally, the timing right now, it seems like so many coaches are getting fired. Boise State fired their coach. Looks like UCLA is going to fire Chip Kelly. The 12-team playoff is coming. All it takes, and I've been saying this for a while, all it takes is to break through to the playoffs one or two times. TCU's not seen the payoff. Michigan has been seeing the payoff where you're making the playoffs. Now, according to Jim Harbaugh, they're America's team, Matt. You come in, make the playoffs, be head and shoulders above everybody except for Ohio State, which seems like now they're on even ground with. And that's right before the playoff expands to where if you're going to be betting, even according to all of ESPN's things that they've been saying for the future, unless there's some big sanctions that come down, they have their futures bets of Bama, Georgia, Michigan, and Ohio State, the four teams they think will make the playoffs almost every year as long as the current coaches stay. And I have to agree with them at this point, right? That's how close James Franklin was to getting in there if Penn State fans would have really pushed for it in 2016. But instead, they were kind of like, let's let the team we lost to get in. And that's where Texas fans right now, they have to be cheering for Alabama to beat Georgia. Because then in that point, I don't see how in any world you can put Georgia or Alabama in ahead of Texas for the fourth team. ESPN hasn't put it in any of their projections of things that can happen. But realistically, if everything else holds serve and you have an undefeated Big Ten, Michigan or Ohio State, they're in. Florida State wins out, they're undefeated, which looks like it's going to happen. I don't want to jinx it, but I would be surprised if Florida State lost at this point. And then Washington. Washington could lose to Oregon, but if that happens and the Pac-12's out, and at this point, does anyone care? They're all joining the Big Ten next year anyway. So if Texas played really close to TCU, I don't care. They beat Bama by 10 points. They haven't had Quinn Ewers like full health for weeks now. So if they can stay with one loss, they need Bama to beat Georgia. And then I think they're in. Now, whether Georgia doesn't lose to Bama, which I think is going to happen, I think Georgia's going to win. And then Texas will probably be the first team out. Because unless Oregon beats Washington, then you have Oregon, Washington, and Texas. Which team do you pick? Oregon and Washington would have beaten each other. Do you prioritize the championship loss? Or does that not matter? Like, doesn't that not factor in? Because that's just the name. Like, oh, that game was a championship game, but you had already lost to them before. I don't know. Or do they
just released the rankings. So thankfully, there's been really no change.
I didn't think there would be. The only thing that I thought might change, and realistically, if they were looking at it, Ohio State probably should have been jumped by Georgia, which is what happened. I think that's the only change in the top eight. So it's Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Florida State, Washington, Oregon, Texas, Alabama. Those are your teams that have a legit chance. There's one team, Louisville, that if they win out, if things break their way, they have to be in. Like, if Louisville wins out with one loss, they're going to jump two-loss Missouri. Missouri is 9 right now. They're going to be up there. It just depends if Bama... Well, let's lay it out. If Georgia wins out, Bama's out, they have 2 losses. So Louisville will probably be, 7th? They need Texas to drop one. Then they need Oregon to probably lose to Washington. So Washington's undefeated. Then it would be Georgia, Washington, Louisville, and the winner of Ohio State, Michigan would be the 14 playoff. And that would be new blood. Would it matter? How bad would Georgia crush Louisville in round one? Pretty bad, I would think.
Yeah, I would think that's probably 3 scores.
So I think right now, most likely scenario for me, I don't want to jinx it, it's going to be Georgia. The 2 seed will be the Big Ten winner. they're going to play Florida State. That's going to be the third seed. And then the fifth or the fourth seed that plays Georgia is most likely going to be Texas or Washington or Oregon. Washington controls their own destiny. The other teams do not. None of the other teams do. I don't care what ESPN writes about Bama controlling their own destiny. Yeah, if they win out, they kind of do, but Texas has the tiebreaker. I don't think you can jump Texas or Alabama over Texas because they have the head-to-head. Otherwise, you're saying, who cares about scheduling tough games at a conference? Like, honestly, if they set that precedent, Michigan and Texas should just mutually cancel the game next year because it doesn't benefit either of them. And they can say, like, well, it's Bama. Like, no. They played in Alabama. Texas beat them by double digits, I think. There's no world in which Alabama should ever jump Texas. Otherwise, why play the game? They have the same record. Texas lost to a rival. That's what your argument was about the Miami game. I still never saw a clear... Going back to the Florida State Miami game, I still never saw a clear decision or explanation on the safety, because ACC initially said that he was touched out at when the ball was still in play. But the ruling means if he's touched with forward progress is the rule that I read. I don't know. That was what people were sharing from the rule book. He never
You know ACC stands for another crappy call. So it doesn't matter what the rule is. It's just whatever you feel like making it.
Because that was the one thing that stood out to me when I saw it. I'm like, he's never making any forward progress. He ran into the end zone and got tackled. That's a clear safety. And then the booth, like the guys on the call were like, we called the ACC. I'm like, they never do that. Like, I've never heard someone be like, we're going to call the conference right now and ask them why they made that call. And then they put out like the one-liner saying, well, he was touched outside the line. And then I saw the same screenshot that you shared. And I'm like, yeah, he is touched. Okay, perfect. But that's not the intent of the rule. The intent of the rule is forward progress. Like, he's a running back running out of the end zone and he's touched outside. Like, that's okay. That makes sense, right? Like, the guy can't pick him up and throw him back into the end zone and say safety. But he ran in himself. And I thought, like, what kind of awareness is he having? Like, why not just kneel down on the one if he knows the guy's grabbing him instead of just keep going? Because it was almost like he was trying to break out. And I thought, he's going to just keep running deeper into the end zone. He's going to run out of the end of the end zone and just run right to the locker room, probably. I don't know where he's going. But that was one I don't think it really would have made a difference, though. If we're being honest, Florida State was won by a touchdown. I think losing the quarterback on the potentially game-tying drive made more of an impact. But if I was a gambling man, I would have bet on Florida State pulling it out in overtime. Miami just didn't look that good. And they're not that good, which is my only thing that I'm worried about with Florida State right now, because Florida State's schedule gets worse and worse every week. Did you catch any of the Duke-UNC game?
No.
You brought up the crappy conference. Dude, there were some very bad calls that hurt Duke, and Duke should have won that game. And I'm an outside, like, observer. I don't care about Duke or UNC at all. I was kind of rooting for, like, the three-way tie or four-way tie, whatever it is. That's impossible now with Duke losing. And it made me think that the ACC kind of did that on purpose because they didn't want the headache of having their weird tiebreaker rules come to light. Because now the three teams that are left, NC State plays Virginia Tech this week. Then they play North Carolina next week. If Virginia Tech and North Carolina, I think, both went out, you can have a two-way tie. I don't know if they really, or no, I guess you could maybe have a three-way tie with them. But the way they line up, I don't know if Louisville plays either one of them. No, they only play Miami. So, I mean, you could, technically could still have it, but it, like, the more likely scenario was if Duke would have won and then they would have had, I think they would have had the easier schedule. I'm kind of like, I don't think there's going to be a tie. I think Louisville's going to go ahead and clinch against Miami, and that's going to be it. It's going to be Florida State, Louisville. Georgia and Alabama already clinched. Must be nice, right? Must be nice to already be clinched into your conference championship game. I think Florida State's clinched, though, too, right?
Yeah, they're in.
So, not everyone has that luxury, Matt, when they're playing in one of the toughest divisions in college football.
Go but,
on. You know, it's funny. Florida State's best win is like 7-3 LSU. The rest of their wins are all 6-4 teams or less. A lot of 5-5 or below. So their record every week when teams play each other and lose, Florida State's strength of schedule gets so weak that I'm surprised Washington didn't jump them. I told you that it was almost like a joke. Florida State lost all their number one votes in the AP and the coaches poll that they had been getting for weeks now. I don't think that's because they barely beat Miami. I think it's more of, hey, all their tough wins they had now looked charm and soft. And I'm kind of worried that they're going to pull some BS where they're like, let's go ahead and do Florida State's going to be out of the playoff and we're going to have Alabama and Georgia both make it if Bama beats them, right? Where it's like, oh, we need two SEC teams because I keep seeing that. And The way they keep talking about the strength of schedule and Florida State not having it, it's like, just jump them with Washington already. Like, Washington has a tougher schedule. I don't understand how Georgia can jump Ohio State, but Washington can't jump Florida State. But you better not try to lie to me and say that Alabama's more deserving than Florida State, because Florida State doesn't have a loss. That's my only concern right now, is that if they start jumping teams that are undefeated, then what are we doing? Like, why even play the games then at that point? Just put in who you want. They really want... ESPN drew up this scenario where the playoff is Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and Alabama. And it's like, we know that's what they want, right? They want it. They want to go ahead and do a Georgia-Ohio State rematch and Saban versus Harbaugh. That's what they want. They'll put whatever... I don't even know what would need to happen for that. Bama would win... So they would put, like, what, Georgia at 4, Ohio State at 1. They probably want Ohio State to win so that they could work that out. Because then it will be a rematch of last year's showdown. And then Harbaugh versus Saban. And they would just be loving it. Like, come on. I guarantee that's what they're begging for. They're probably cheering for TCU last week. And they're like, Florida State, come on. Lose to Miami. But at this point, like I said,
they did try hard to do it.
Well, like I said, it wouldn't even surprise me if Bama beats Georgia and the other teams all lose. If somehow a one-loss SEC team just happens to make it over Florida State.
But this is where
it's like
where my frustration was with that game is that if you're ranked in the top four, you have to bridge this gap that you've been stumbling over for the last couple seasons. And if you are, you know, I think Norvell's doing a good job of teaching this team to be resilient. And I feel like playing all these games late into the fourth quarter, like they're going to be tested enough that they can play a tight game and still be focused to play late in the game. But on the flip side of that, I also feel like if you're a playoff caliber team, you can't let teams like Miami hang around. And when you let these teams, like you're asking to be upset. You should be able to just run the ball, move the ball at will. Don't let them hang around. Don't get cute. Just bury them and just take the fight to them and be done. And almost in a way, I would have liked to have seen them do to Miami what Michigan did to Penn State. We're better than you. We have the star power behind it. Stop us and just put the boots to them.
They almost did. They had the running power. I thought that I was watching Florida State and I thought this team, the way their offense moves is very similar to how Michigan's been moving the ball. But then they got away from it and they're doing all those rollouts and just letting Jordan Travis take hits. And the one thing I noticed, it's like, maybe it's just like an announcer thing, but Jordan Travis can just take a pounding and no one says a word. JJ gets tackled and they're like, oh man, what a hit. Oh, he should never be taking shots like that. And I'm like, he got tackled one time on a running play. He's running with the ball. Like, what do you want him to do? Just slide every time And it's like, I watched Caleb Williams get just pounded. Like last year, he got so beat up that he was like limping in the game. And no one said anything. But as soon as JJ runs the ball, they're like, oh, how dangerous. He could get hurt out there. I'm like, he's the only quarterback that they do that to. I've noticed it.
But I've looked like you run the risk of getting your quarterback injured. And I'll be honest, I have been hesitant as an offensive coach to want to run the quarterback. But the more that I started looking at defenses and how they structure things, I feel like it's important to maybe not every playmaker quarterback run, but I think you have to have the threat of the quarterback pulling it and running out the back door. And I think that's one of the things that gives Florida State some balance is like, if you're going to tee off on that power running game, all it takes is three or four times a game you pull it and rip off a 10, 15-yard run and pick up a first down. It changes drives. It changes the dynamic of the game. And then the other thing that really hurts them is freaking Johnny Wilson dropping passes. Like, I'm so tired of, for as big as he is, they funnel a lot of pass attempts to him. And there are times that he makes the plays, but it's almost like Mike Evans. Like, I get so frustrated watching him because he's such a big target, but then he drops like a majority of his pass.
That's where, when I saw, to your point about like running the quarterback, though, that's what opened the run game for Michigan, because Penn State then, I think Michigan's two touchdown runs, if I remember correctly. I know the Blake one, he ran through like the C gap, I think. And the defensive end didn't crash down because JJ had just run for like 10 yards. So it opens things up. But like having a big receiver like Johnny Wilson, like that also takes some of the pressure off, like puts it on the defense because like, what are you going to do? You can't just like let him drop balls. You have to kind of cover him and focus on him. And then they have Keon Coleman on the other side, right? That's a great receiver too. And I don't think a lot of teams have two weapons like that. Even Ohio State, for all the love Marvin Harrison gets, their other receivers to me are kind of disappointing. I know there have been some injuries and stuff, and I think Stover, the tight end, has been coming back, and Michigan had the big breakup on one of his plays that should have been a touchdown last year. If he pulls in that could have been a game. But it's like Florida State has two.
It's being speculated now that Hartline is worried that Florida State's going to steal one of his five-star receiver prospects. Because like, they think they have it narrowed down to like his burner account that's been like downplaying all these other videos.
Well, that would be funny because Hartline has to be like in line for one of these coaching jobs. I don't understand how he wouldn't be, right? Because he's like a top recruiter. He hasn't been a head coach yet. But like seeing Sherrone Moore, Michigan's interim coach, which everyone made fun of him crying after the game. And yeah, it could be a little bit over the top. But the dude just found out he was coaching and he has as many top 10 wins as James Franklin does in his career. One. He's only been coaching at two games, Matt. The beginning of the year, he coached one of the other games. Michigan, I wonder what the record is. Michigan has had, what, four, five different coaches register wins this year? That has to be a record, right? You just don't have that happen. But like Hartline, you would think that he's seeing other coordinators like from other big schools like Manny Diaz being mentioned again when he just came off a rough stretch. Unless he really thinks that Ryan Day is about to leave and he's going to be promoted again. He was just promoted the offensive coordinator. You just can't keep recruiting like that and not have like someone like A&M just offer you. I don't think they would offer him as the head coach, but I've heard some rumors of other schools trying to pry him away as the offensive coordinator. Like even Dion, didn't he fire his offensive coordinator? Which is like crazy. And so that's another thing. Like Brian Hartline, I don't think he would leave Ohio State for one of those other jobs. But if you can kind of get into a head coach and waiting, do you just wait? And how long do you wait? Because like, is he a great coach? We don't know. Like Ryan Day has been a great offensive mind. And it's been wins, but recruiting has still put them over the top. And NIL really hasn't, the rest of the Big Ten hasn't really been trying with NIL stuff. the expanded conference, I don't know if Ohio State starts to pick up a few more losses if the pressure heats up for Day, or maybe they just keep winning and it doesn't matter. I don't know. Hartline just stays forever because he doesn't want another job.
But I think as far as looking at other jobs is concerned, we've talked about this before. I feel like you also have to look at some of these jobs too, like what makes it a quality job? Like when you look at Texas A&M, they may pay you $200 million and cut you the check. But you also know if you don't win a national championship by year three, you're fired. And, you know, with what Mike Norvell has been able to accomplish at Florida State, he's in year four now of this rebuild that was essentially a complete stripped down rebuild that most programs aren't going to have the patience to allow him to get the program turned around the way he's been able to do it. And I think like that's one of the things that you have to look at some of these programs too. And it's like, what, how much time or how much leeway is the fan base going to give you? You know, you go to Arkansas, you go to Mississippi State, like you're going to have a season, if that. And if you're not a 9-win team, 10-win team, they're going to be pushing for the axe.
And I mean, that's why, who's going to take the job? Because like, I feel like if you're A&M and you're trying to get a coach to come in, and what did they give Jimbo, like an empty trophy case or whatever? And they're like, this is where your national championship trophy is going to be?
No, they gave him a blank trophy. It was like national championship 20, whatever, like blank, blank.
Even more embarrassing. But like, I mean, this extends to kind of like the NFL too, because Buffalo, did they fire Ken Dorsey? Was that official?
That is official. However, before you get into anything NFL related, I feel like A&M firing Jimbo sets off a weird dynamic that I think would make sense. Because when you look at Pitt right now being on the struggle bus, I don't think Narduzzi can survive. And unless he completely cleans house. So in a move that makes sense, at the end of the season, Narduzzi jumps ship and goes back to Michigan State. He has rapport and relationships there. It opens the door for Jimbo Fisher to bring his pro-style offense to Pitt, because he'll run a slow pace, he'll run a slow tempo, pro-style with the big linemen that, like, Pitt fans will be lenient with him. Like, they're not going to be in a rush to run him out of town. And the thing that Jimbo Fisher can do is recruit that would help, create some, close the gap between Pitt and Penn State.
Is Wonstadt available? He can get him on staff as a recruiter.
He can just get him fitted for a watch.
I've been bringing that up for years. Get Wonstadt on the staff. Start bringing some of the legends in. I honestly, Jimbo Fisher's from West Virginia, and he's been interested in the West Virginia job before. And the way West Virginia's been like kind of floating around, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up there instead of Pitt. Because I feel like if he
goes to West Virginia, he's going to be starting close to square one. Like, it'll almost be a repeat of what he had to deal with at A&M, because Sumlin was an air raid guy too. And so till he gets more of his pro style guys in place where he can step in a Pitt and have more of the personnel closer to what he typically runs.
Well, I'll be honest, West Virginia's offense, I don't even know what they're trying to do. So, like, they might have some of the guys there. I don't know if it would work out. Narduzzi, though, for Michigan State, I wonder if there's some bad blood there. Because last time they had a late, remember when D'Antonio stepped down? And maybe they just wanted to stay away from D'Antonio-connected guys. But, like, there are rumors that there's some bad blood there, and they aren't interested in having Narduzzi come back. So, like, if they're trying to distance from that, and they're throwing around big paychecks because of Big Ten money, I don't know if Narduzzi gets pushed out, because Pitt might be thinking about, well, Narduzzi's been winning. He won the ACC. He's been had a couple successful years. Like, yeah, it's a down year. Like he said, he didn't have the players ready to go. Next year, like, I think at Pitt, you have to look at it with the 12-team playoff. Narduzzi would have made it, like, what, two or three times?
Yeah.
Possibly. So, like, I stick with it.
I know with some of the Pitt fans that I talk to, it turns into this argument of, like, you may not like Narduzzi or, like decisions that he makes, but at the end of the day, who are you getting to come to Pitt? Like, sometimes the devil you know is better than the one you don't. And it's like you can roll the dice and say, oh, yeah, fire and bring in this new coach, but that doesn't guarantee success.
Well, that's the argument for Franklin. Penn State's like they're hoping that Franklin gets mentioned for A&M. It's like A&M recruits itself with their NIL money. Why would they want a guy known for recruiting and poor in-game decisions? Right? Like that helps. Because even Penn State fans, like, I'm telling them, you're being delusional if you don't think that making the playoffs a few years helps out. Because, like, I've said it on record, like, Michigan doesn't have a Jabril Peppers type guy that's, like, dynamic enough to change the entire game this year. Like, Blake Corum is great as a running back, but they don't have, like, that game breaker type guy, and there's not a lot of them. And Marvin Harrison might be the guy this year. From what I've seen against like some of the bigger schools, though, he's been able to been slowed down enough that it doesn't matter. Like Notre Dame was able to slow him down. He wasn't like so explosive. Like remember, what was it, Rondell Moore when he was crushing Ohio State that year at Purdue? Like there wasn't. I haven't seen like an exciting guy like that. They talk about the quarterback from LSU, but like he didn't do it against Florida State. He did nothing. So like people trying to shoehorn him into the Heisman, it's like his team has three losses. Like I know it's not a record type thing, but if you can't keep Florida State and some of these other games close, you don't deserve the Heisman. I just don't care. You can put up stats against Joker schools, but the schools that you should have been competing against, you're not putting the numbers up. And I don't even care about the Heisman. But that's where it's like this year the Heisman's kind of wide open. Where it could just be the winner of Washington and Oregon, whoever gets it, their quarterback gets it, and all right, whatever. Now, if Harrison goes off and has like three or four touchdowns against Michigan and they win and they're undefeated, then maybe he gets it. But I mean, you're not scoring much against like Notre Dame, but you score three times against Michigan State. It's like, oh, okay, awesome. Like that to me, that doesn't move the needle for me in terms of like big time game breakers, but. Coleman for Florida State could be that guy, but he was injured, right? He's back now. I don't know. That's my last thought on it. Because like A&M and even Pitt had that guy in Addison. They're not able to keep him around. So like Jimbo coming there might be able to mitigate some of that. But in the ACC, I wonder what's going to happen. Like if there's a scenario where Pitt keeps Narduzzi and he makes the playoffs 3 years and then recruiting picks up and Penn State in the tougher conference isn't making it 3 years. They're only making it because Penn State right now, if you're talking about winning the Big Ten, like they've only won it one time in like a decade. Narduzzi has won the ACC the same amount. And if that's what it takes to make the new playoffs, like, is there going to be a difference? Will Penn State fans be pretty pissed if Pitt's making it at the same rate they are? Probably, because the recruiting is going to pick up for Pitt in that process, right? Recruits are going to see Pitt making the playoffs, and they're going to get in. Now he just has to keep it rolling. I don't care if you have a couple down years. Like Iowa, they're consistent enough where they only have two losses, Matt. They're going to be in the Big Ten championship most likely. And who knows? Ohio State has struggled against other teams. If they're the team in the Big Ten championship and Iowa beats them, then what happens? Right? It's like complete chaos. I don't think that Iowa matches up well against Michigan because like we saw what happened with Penn State and their philosophy of like running the ball is similar to more of like what Michigan does compared to what Ohio State does, I think, where they opened the can on Iowa. I could see Michigan doing that same thing again as it happened last time they played. But Ohio State, Iowa's built to slow that type of offense, air raid offense, down. So some other interesting things to think about. But yeah, getting into the NFL quick, because I know we've been neglecting it before I end up with some college crazy stuff at the end of the show. Buffalo. I don't even know what the top team is. I'm not sold on Buffalo because I don't think Josh Allen is a top quarterback. Honestly, I think he throws the stats up. They're 5-5. Miami lost a game, so they're only a game ahead. But like Josh Allen hasn't impressed me every game I watch. And I see the stats that he puts up and everyone's like, he's a great fantasy quarterback. Same thing with Dak Prescott. I have him on my fantasy team. Oh, awesome, guys. He beat up the Giants. Everyone's talking like Dak just went ahead and blew up the Chiefs. No, he played well against the Giants. I expected that. I'd be surprised if he did it back-to-back weeks, right? I don't even know who Dallas plays next week. They play the Panthers. I guess he could do it back-to-back weeks. But, like, do it against the Eagles, right? Do it against the 49ers where they only put up 10 points, Dak. Then you have Josh Allen. He's, like, fumbling, throwing interceptions. It's like, what are you doing? He's the guy. I talk about JJ from Michigan's quarterback, how he runs the ball, and everyone's talking about how he shouldn't be running it. I watched Josh Allen take shots, do like the John Elway windmill on a couple hits. And I'm like, why is he doing that? It's a regular season game. John Elway's doing that in the playoffs for a Super Bowl win. Like he had to do it. He didn't care if he got injured on that play. Josh Allen's doing it now. And it's just like, how are you losing to the Broncos, man? What are you doing? I just don't get it. Throwing two picks last night. QBR of 27.
One.
No, he had two against Denver.
No, but the one pick, he has that Brett Favre rocket arm, and it ricocheted right off the guy's hands and went to the defender. So, like,
doesn't matter. That, takes him off the throw.
It's there. But catch a ball.
Takes him off the throw.
You're a professional. Catch a ball.
But I need the rocket every throw. That's the one thing.
Do you not expect Rembrandt to paint? Do you not?
So he's
been. If you had the ability, God given ability, to throw the ball 80 yards with a flick of your wrist, you would do it.
Matt, he's had an interception in like each of his last six games or so. He has 11 interceptions on the year. Like, they haven't even played 11 games, have they? I know what the record is. I should do the math record. No, they played like 9. Maybe they played 10. But I don't know. But they thrown 11 interceptions. Why? Why are you averaging an interception a game? Like, what's wrong with you that you have to do that? Like, I just don't get it. Like, it feels like Josh Allen, is it his size? Like, he hasn't done really much in the playoffs either. And I've been buying into Bill's hype, it feels like, for the past couple years, and I think I'm over it now. That was kind of like the come clean moment, right? And I don't know what he can do to change that for me. Win? Stop throwing picks? Be safe with the ball? Sometimes it's better just to throw the ball away. Forcing it to Diggs?
That's okay to force it to Diggs. I would rather him force it to Diggs as opposed to Pittsburgh, where it's like, we have a really good receiver here in Pickens, and we're just not going to throw him the ball.
Can I let me talk about that last play, the Packers versus Steelers. Because Packers, I don't understand the offense still. And it's like, I don't even know if it's on Jordan Love. Like, he's taking shots to the end zone. Like, I'm sure they're telling him to do it. But the last play, the Steelers lined up with everybody in the end zone across the board, right? And I thought, he's going to throw it to the end zone. It's going to be intercepted. All he had to do was throw a hook and ladder. They had no guys running up. Tomlin told them to stay back. Run a hook and ladder. And let your guy try to run through the tackle to score the touchdown, right? Throwing it into the end zone when there's six guys lined up or however many guys they had back there, going to work 0% of the time. A hook and ladder to like lateral it is going to work better than doing it on a kickoff when you're like on your own 10-yard line, right? Because they only had four guys rushing, I think. So there might have been whatever the math is on that. 6-7 guys back there. The rest of them, they were just all lined up in the end zone, waiting for him to lob it up to try to break it up. But they were only on like the 20 or 30-yard line. Run a hook and ladder. run trips, do a crossing pattern. Actually, you could just do the middle guy. He runs up and he does like a hitch at like the 5 yard line. And the other two guys kind of do like a, they just do a curve and then they cross and he picks who to pitch it to. And you have two guys available for a hook and ladder. Like he turns, sees where the defense is. Oh, there's only one guy to beat. He's crashing. I'll pitch it to the guy running towards the pylon. Boom. Why not mix it up? I've never seen anyone do that. And I've seen the guys line up in the end zone like that. It's like a common move now. And throwing it up never works. Like Hail Marys work whenever you're actually throwing it from like the 50 and it has to be high in the air. You can't do that from the 20. Like, you're not going to ice cream truck it up. Be like, all right, I'm going to throw this 50 yards in the air and give my guy a jump ball. Because that's what Hail Mary needs, right? So I don't understand why teams don't mix it up. There has to be a better way. Because, heck, even if you had the three trips on the right side and they ran up and he just ran a dig at like the 10 or 5 yard line and he caught it, all the defenders would rush to him. So if you had another guy run a wheel route down the sideline, he could catch it, throw it to him like backwards, like a lateral, while everyone's crashing towards him. And then that guy just runs up the sideline. It would be an easy touchdown. Unless the defender saw him. But then, like I said, he would only have to break one tackle. Or he would just lateral back. Much much higher percentage, I think, than throwing a laser that gets intercepted. And then everyone starts fighting on the sideline. That's my two cents from the end of that game. I'm still not sold on the Packers coaching. They're blaming it on Love. I don't think it's him. I think a lot of it has to do with coaching. And even the Steelers offense didn't look as bad. But Pickett's still playing hurt. Like, what are you supposed to do if your quarterback's hurt? I mean, look around the league. How many guys are starting that are rookies this year? But I do want to give a shout out to CJ Stroud, Matt. He never beat Michigan, but man, he's playing pretty solid. Mike Tomczak, better look out. CJ Stroud might be the best Ohio State quarterback in the NFL of all time. Because it's not Justin Fields, right? Justin Fields never played this good. And they're not even solid. Like, I mean, they're like what, around 500, a little bit above Houston. They're at 5-4 right now. Not even the Jaguars don't impress me either. Like, I feel like this year could be a year where we get a new Super Bowl champion. It's looking like it's going to be the Eagles. Maybe the Chiefs repeat. But in the AFC, I think things are wide open. And I don't think the Bills have a chance. That's where I'm going with this. I don't think the Steelers have a chance. I feel like the Ravens, even though they blew that game on some coaching stuff, I thought down the stretch. And I think it was more Lamar throwing that pick. He threw that pick six, and that's what basically lost them the game. Why? What are you doing, Lamar? You're pulling a Josh Allen here, buddy. That's my NFL thoughts for the week. Not as
strong of an arm.
You don't think Lamar Jackson has a strong arm?
Not as strong as Josh Allen's.
That's because Josh Allen's throwing tip balls up for people to pick off.
He reminds me of Brett Favre.
Without the wins?
Yeah. They're going to come.
And the harassing women?
Brett Favre. They're like, oh, he's too sporadic.
Brett Favre was harassing women, stealing money from the state, right? Isn't that what he's been accused of?
Yeah, they weren't missing it.
No, actually, they weren't. Didn't it take a couple years for that audit to come through? Or he just didn't show up at one of the events or something? That's how they noticed? Crazy. Because like the other thing with like the 49ers, I think Debo Samuel was back. They're still relying way too much on Christian McCaffrey. It reminds me of like someone playing Tecmo Super Bowl and just giving the ball to Bo Jackson every time. And they're like, why isn't it working? It's like you have all these weapons, but you shifted your offense to McCaffrey and now you're worse. You're a worse team. Like you have a better guy, but you're a worse team because the Niners, when they were winning, were spreading the ball around. And with McCaffrey, he gets so many touches. Like, he's going to be tired by playoff time. I would be surprised if the Niners went to the Super Bowl. Maybe the Lions? I don't know. Wouldn't it be crazy if that trade worked out for both teams? where the Rams got their Super Bowl, and then a couple years later, the Lions get theirs, getting rid of Stafford. They could just build a statue of Stafford and Goff hugging outside Detroit Stadium. Right? Yeah, like a friend's trophy. I should write that in. I'll write that in. Anything you want to talk about else for the NFL?
I want to give a shout out to the Atlanta Falcons for finally deciding to actually run their stud rookie running back, Bijan Robinson. I love how bad Arthur Smith is just getting slammed by the media. They're like, you know, you have a good running back. Why don't you use him? Because, damn it, I have three tight ends and I can run them on jet sweeps if I want to. It's like, what the hell's wrong with you? But the analytics say, just hand the ball off to your stud rookie running back who's averaging 6 yards a carry. No, we're going to run our tight end and let him try.
That's all you need, Matt. That's all you need is to be stubborn as a good coach. Like Bill Belichick, it's working out for him. It goes back to my Brady point, right? Maybe Brady is still more important than whatever Bill Belichick's doing these days. I don't know. It's kind of like with the Raiders. They have that rookie guy in from Purdue. And they're just like, we're just going to not give you any good plays.
But see, that's what makes me laugh, because you look at that and they're like, hey, we have Davante Adams. He's a good receiver. Maybe we should just, throw him the friggin' ball. Just let him go.
Yeah, but they weren't doing it for the longest time. Like, I was almost benching him, dude. His targets were like four. I'm like, who's giving him four targets? Two? And he had two catches the one week.
Imagine that. They're scoring like jumps off the charts now that
they're moving the ball around. Because the one game, I think it was Detroit, they just kept throwing up deep shots to him like seven times. He caught one for 11 yards. It's like, buddy, work him on some slants or like some crossing routes or something. And they finally did it against the Jets. I'm like, it's the Jets, but. And like Jacoby Myers, like he kind of fell off the face of the earth when I talked about him on the show a couple weeks ago. Like, oh, he's doing awesome. And then it's like, no, we're not going to throw him the ball either. We're going to do nothing. We're going to just let him get sacked and try to run Jacobs, which I appreciate because I have him too. It's like the worst mistake. If the Raiders can somehow still get on a winning tear, my fantasy team could just light it up. We had the most points scored in our league last week. We're sitting at 4-6, Matt. We're ready to go ahead and make the playoffs. Maybe my destiny isn't to be an 8 seed and upset the 1 seed and then follow that up with a 60-point performance in week 2. Maybe we have power to go ahead and make a deep playoff run. I don't know. It all comes down to what the Raiders and what the Browns decide to do. Because the Browns turned it around and the Raiders started opening things up and my team started winning again. That's all I need. That's all I need from the NFL. We'll check back in. I just feel like college stuff has been too crazy. So I want to circle back around on that for the final bell. Do you have anything else you want to talk about for the NFL before I do that?
No.
So the last thing I didn't talk about is the Big Ten lawsuit. So Michigan tried to file a suit on Friday after they found out that Harbaugh was suspended. And I'm one of the official alumni signers of one of the court documents going up this Friday, I believe, is the next court case. Talk about cutting it close, right? So we're trying to put together a thing to get Harbaugh back on the field, because we talked about it. If they don't tie him to the case, they're suspending Harbaugh, saying that it is it's punishment for the entire university. It's easier just to suspend the head coach. But if it's really just one staffer, and the precedent from the Wake Forest incident is that guy was suspended for half a game and there wasn't any wins or losses like taken away. I don't see how you can just suspend the head coach for three games, if not more, right? The precedent's there. Like, yeah, he was illegally filming signs or whatever they said he was doing. They said the proof is there, but it's still only one guy. And if it's not tied to any staffer, I keep seeing Ohio State say it's tied to a staffer. That kid was like 19. If there's a mastermind, you're not pulling in a 19-year-old staffer or whatever it is to help with it. right? It seems more like this guy was doing it on his own. He was getting young kids that were interested in like moving up the ranks to help him record games, and that's that. If it came out because he was doing that weird child predator stuff, which is might have been how this all leaked out, because he got pinched. Which, did you hear that story?
No.
Because it's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. Because at first I blew it off because the article didn't make sense. Because New York Post reported that a young Michigan staffer tied to Connor Stallions got caught up in one of those Dateline things where like you go to meet an underage girl, right? Right in the middle of the story, it said the investigation is halted because Shakur was shot dead. And I thought, what does Tupac have to do with this, right? Like, did they seriously just copy and paste this story into another article about Tupac? No. The guy that was doing the Got You was just some random guy with a YouTube channel. His last name was Shakur. He was doing, I don't know if it was a setup. They said they weren't sure if it was tied to it, and I didn't see any other news on it. He was at a restaurant. They don't know if he was doing another setup. The guy shot him to death. So they're investigating it, saw the connection to the Michigan guy as they were like investigating the videos, because this guy actually died. But he apparently got Michigan's coach like texting like with some young girl, thinking it was a young girl, but it was this guy that ended up getting murdered. So they're thinking that all the FBI rumors are tied to that case. And by investigating his like phone or whatever, maybe like this other private investigation firm or whatever saw that they were doing the sign stealing stuff and turned it in. They don't know if that's been confirmed, but it doesn't really go against what has already been out there. If he was just working with younger staffers, Connor Stallions, that is, then who knows? They also said that he might have forged Blake Corum's name on a vacuum business, which is another crazy thing. Did you see that? So there's an official court filing for Connor Stallions because he ordered a bunch of vacuums and had them on his porch. So the HOA did like a filing against him.
And then he didn't clean any of them. He had a business of just dirty used vacuums.
Yeah, he was supposed to be refurbishing them, but he was just selling them. So it's insane, right? I think it gives more credence to this is just one guy doing a bunch of like scam businesses on the side than it does to like a Michigan mastermind. Like, I don't see how you can look at it and see, well, this guy gets crazier and crazier. He has a manifesto. He's doing weird vacuum things. I don't see how you can look at that and be like, well, where is he tied to the rest of the coaches? The only thing they said is there's that one video where there's some videos where he's like talking to other coaches on the Michigan sideline, but they're pretending like he's not a coach. Like, he's listed as a coach. Why wouldn't they talk to him on the sideline? Right? Like, people were like, got him. Look, he's right there. He's talking to the defensive coordinator. It's like, yeah, he's an analyst. He's supposed to be telling them like what defense the other team's running. Like, that's his entire role. Like, Michigan put a thing out saying like Ohio State has a guy doing the same exact thing. Every team, like, they gave a list of them and it's in the court filing. So we'll see what happens on Friday. I'm wondering if Harbaugh is just going to be back. And that's going to be like, does the NCAA just take Harbaugh suspension as the end of it? Because this guy was already suspended immediately and he resigned after he didn't come to the Michigan thing. So I don't know what else they can really do. Would they really take away wins?
I'm not sure.
Oh, my thing is going off. The other thing is there's a rumor that Michigan players are beating Vegas. And I thought, okay, like, what are they, point shaving? Like Iowa was doing? It's very easy if you're Iowa to point shave when your offense barely scores, right? You're winning games by like 3 points. Michigan's been beating the spread. So if they're beating it, how are they point shaving? Like, hey, really bet on us. We're going to beat the line against Penn State. I'm like, oh, they're cheating. They're better than what they're supposed to be. And then someone put out a thing. It's like, Michigan isn't even the best team against the spread anyway. There's like other teams that are ahead of them. So I don't know where, like, that's another Ohio State rumor that's probably going to go nowhere. Cause like, it doesn't make any sense. If you're point shaving, that's one thing, but that means you're not beating the spread, but Michigan's clearly beating the spread. So, and they're not running the score up because they're putting backups in the third quarter. So it's not like Harbaugh's going for two or like Ohio State. Ohio State is definitely keeping guys in and throwing up deep shots to try to get, improve their Heisman chances. Michigan's not doing that. JJ threw, what, eight times, nine times against Penn State? He probably lost to Heisman in that game. Did he care? Didn't look like it. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing, like the team dynamic. Other teams, I think that's the one thing when you're talking about NIL and we can go back to Texas A&M. A&M's paying for all these guys. They want the stats. They want the thing. If you're, even if you're like Arch Manning, because I keep hearing that from Texas, it's like, if Quinn Ewers comes back next year, you don't think Arch Manning might transfer? Because like he was told a process of, hey, you're going to be the backup for a year and then you're going to be the guy. It's the exact same reason Quinn Ewers transferred to Texas in the first place. Because Ohio State kept Fields or Stroud, whichever one it was, I can't remember, around for an extra year. And he said, I'm out. I want to go play. I'm not redshirting twice, right?
Yep.
So if Arch May, like if Quinn Ewers comes back, that's kind of what it's like. But that's because of the NIL stuff. They need to build stats. Michigan, their culture, it doesn't seem like they care about that. Blake and Donovan have been cut, splitting snaps. So like, even though Blake has a ton of touchdowns, he doesn't have a lot of yards, which is good for his career, right? Because he's not carrying the ball 100 times. Is it going to cost him the Heisman? Yeah, I don't think he's listed anywhere. He could break the Michigan touchdown record, and he's not even anywhere near the Heisman list, Blake Corum. But JJ, they had him on there because his like QBR and stuff was so high, but he was only playing three quarters. You can't run up stats on that. And I'd rather win and then have the guys rest, but that's a culture thing. You have to have the guys sit down and not want to run the stats up. And with today's NIL, that's got to be tough to sell recruits. Like Michigan just got a four-star quarterback recruit. I think he was like eighth overall. And they're talking about him, them being in the running for another top 10 quarterback. It's like, how? Like, I'm kind of baffled at it, right? Because a lot of the young quarterbacks, I feel like you could pick any other team and like go to USC and you can put up all these stats. Like, I don't know how Michigan's able to like secure a top 10 QB other than, do you want to win? Like, yeah, I do. Do you care about stats? Like, nah, I guess not really. Like, I mean, JJ's mentioned in the quarter, like the NFL draft room type stuff. So it's not like he's not going to get a shot in the NFL. It's just he's not going to get any awards. So the recruiting for that's different, I think. And same with like Jimbo going to Pitt. Without the money of A&M, is he going to keep recruiting well? I mean, Florida State was in Florida. That's top recruiting. With Florida being down and Miami being down, Mike Norvell, if he's been mentioned at going to A&M, I think that would be a dumb move by him. Don't you? I mean, he's your coach. But
I just want to lock them up long term, keep them there.
That's what I want Michigan to do with Jim Harbaugh. Because like the NFL stuff, I feel like these suspensions and the rumors of agents going after the NFL trying to say that Harbaugh should be suspended if he jumps to the NFL too, might just stay in college then. Lock up for 10 more years. A&M supposedly interested in John Harbaugh. Could you imagine? And I don't know, like John Harbaugh doesn't really have a tie to college. Really? He's basically been an NFL guy his whole career. Jim Harbaugh played like at Michigan and then he coached at Stanford. I think John Harbaugh was like with the Eagles before he went to the Ravens, right? So if he left the Ravens and went to the A&M, I would be just shocked, right? And it'd be a bummer if John Harbaugh beat Jim Harbaugh for a national championship just like he did in the Super Bowl too. That'd be a supreme bummer for me. So I hope it doesn't happen. But the last thing I had real quick there, like I mentioned it earlier about Michigan possibly leaving the Big Ten. There's been some heat around this. I don't know if it's a pressure tactic on the Big Ten itself. And I've been very vocal about the Big Ten being the highest paid conference and how I feel like they're in a power position. This abuse of power going after Harbaugh, it could be the death knell for the conference, right? Because I've heard rumors that I mean, this is from the board. So it's not just like random people saying. The Board of Regents already said that they've discussed leaving the Big Ten. And I've heard that conversations were had with Notre Dame, the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, and potentially what's left of the Pac-12. Because, like, if Michigan goes to, like, an independent-type Notre Dame-type deal, where they come to an agreement with the Pac-2 and Notre Dame and maybe the ACC for, like, five games, that's a winning deal, I feel like. They could be independent like Notre Dame. You can possibly keep the TV contract with Fox. Fox loves showing Michigan. And I saw some of the numbers leak out. Michigan's at least valuable, value worthy of at least 25% of the Big Ten contract. Ohio State's the other 25%. The rest of the teams make up half of that, if that. Michigan Penn State's ratings this past week was better than all the rest of the Big Ten games combined. Now, of course, that's a big time game, right? Top 10 matchup. But Michigan and Ohio State definitely drive the conference. An ESPN guy put out that he's like made it vague. Like, if there's conversations to be had, there's only four teams that drive numbers, and that's Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame. And he said Bama. I've always included Texas in that mix. They had the Longhorn Network, right? But yeah. Obviously ESPN, if their guy's putting it out there, they
but
must
that's
not have
only
got
only when they're back.
Well, they must not have got the return on that Longhorn Network, right? And they're probably regretting that. So they're not including them anymore. I don't know. But I also read a thing where Ohio State's numbers have been higher recently. They've also had higher records, which might have played a part in it. But TVs are concerned that their numbers are very regional and mainly focused in Ohio compared to Notre Dame and Michigan that pull a lot of like cities like New York and stuff that advertisers value more. So there might even be more value to Michigan leaving than what it is. And if you could come up with it, I'm not saying that it's like a, like the SEC, of course they're going to reach out to Michigan. There's been rumors that Texas is one of the teams reaching out. Because like if Texas could reach out and say, hey, we don't want to play A&M on Thanksgiving weekend. A&M can play LSU still. What if we played Michigan? Because like they play Oklahoma in October. They're not going to change that date. A Texas-Michigan game at the end of the year, that's going to do crazy ratings, right? Penn State's supposed to be supposedly not happy too with the Big Ten deals, bringing the West teams in and some of the other things that have been happening in the conference. If Penn State left with Michigan, I think that would crush the Big Ten. That would be the end of it. Ohio State's not going to be able to keep the conference on their own. If Penn State, or even if just Michigan announced that they're leaving first, and you're the Pac-4 schools coming in, I think that would kind of give you pause considering all four of them, the highlights of their schedule the next couple years are all Michigan games. I joked about it when that schedule came out, Matt. All four of them requested to play Michigan. They didn't request to play Ohio State. They didn't request to play Penn State. They requested to play Michigan, and they got it. Well, wish granted. I'm sure the Big Ten commissioner was probably laughing as he drew that up. Like, yeah, let's see Michigan win the conference with this schedule. Right? So if Michigan had the power to move, and let's say they don't even join a conference, or heck, if Notre Dame and Michigan said, we don't want to have just two power conferences and they join the ACC, I don't think Florida State and Clemson would leave. Because then you're in a conference that's going to make more money. Because think about it, the Big Ten television, their contract's going to get cut, probably go down to what the SEC is making. The ACC conference payouts are going to go up and probably at least be able to match. If Notre Dame and Michigan came in, the ACC television contract would probably match. And I think we'd see all three conferences make about the same amount of money. I think the ACC then would get a deal with ESPN and NBC, like absorbing that Notre Dame and Michigan contract that they have now, where it's like on Peacock or whatever. And then the Big Ten obviously would take the cut from NBC and whatever. And they would probably just be on Fox and CBS then. And it would be a weird dynamic where you have the ACC on NBC and ESPN, the SEC only on ESPN, and then the Big 12 kind of floating between the rest of them. Like, I don't think Michigan would join the Big 12. I think that would be more of like, hey, we're going independent. Do you want to have some scheduling? And of course they're going to say, yeah. They're going to be like, hell yeah, we want that. We just lost Texas and Oklahoma. You don't think that they would want to fill that up with Michigan coming to town? A lot of those schools weren't even selling out when Texas was coming. At least Michigan fans carry. And I don't know how many there are around there. But we will see what happens. If the Big Ten doubles down, I mean, there's heat coming that it could definitely happen. And with the way the Big Ten contract set up, I don't think there's a real solid grant of rights where it could just happen right away. It's like the SEC. You're in it because we're making the most money. If you want to leave, go for it. But I guarantee if the Big Ten commissioner, because there's been rumors that they didn't want them to include the Ohio State game as a suspension. Fox only wanted two games, and they didn't even want Penn State in it. They didn't want him suspended at all. But it probably worked out ratings-wise for the Penn State game. Now they probably want him back for the Ohio State game because that's going to be an undefeated matchup. Can you imagine if he's not there? Maybe Fox wants the numbers. I don't know. Maybe the controversy drives ratings if he's not there. But if it's his first game back, you better believe that there's going to be more hype around the game than if he's still suspended for a third game. But we'll see what happens. That's my last thing. I have been hearing that Michigan might move. I've talked to some other conference contacts. Not really any movement, but they don't know what's going on yet. They're still open. Like, conversations have been happening, is what I've heard, about the future of the conference. Not so much about adding Michigan to, say, the ACC or whatever. But just, it might be enough to keep the conference together. Because if the Big Ten starts losing members, like, Ohio State's entire identity is about beating Michigan every year. If Michigan leaves and is like, we're not playing you, what happens to the Ohio State program? And if Penn State follows them, who's their rival? Illinois? Michigan State?
They're rivaled, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they'd go unrivaled. It would probably be Michigan State, right? And they're in the middle of a slump. Because Penn State holds the key. They've always been just like kind of unhappy with the Big Ten. It would be funny if they always have disdain for Michigan. Because I always see Penn State and Ohio State fans teaming up. Like, I saw so many Penn State fans commenting, like, can't wait till Ohio State beats Michigan. It's like, why would you want Ohio State to beat them? That's the team you can't beat for sure. Like, Michigan coming out and knocking Ohio State down a few pegs helps Penn State. But yet their fans don't realize that. And they want Ohio State to stay a step ahead of them. I just don't get it. Right? Don't you want the top teams in your... Like, it benefits Florida State that Clemson is down. There's no other way around it. Right? If Florida State did everything they could and barely beat Clemson in overtime, and then they had to play them again, they don't want that. It's much better that they're far away from the ACC championship as possible. That's what Penn State should be saying to Ohio State. But instead, their fans are like Stockholm Syndrome. So if Penn State came to the ACC, they would have the Pitt rivalry. They'd get Syracuse. They'd get Boston College, Virginia Tech, Miami back. Like, that was a big 80s thing, right? That's what Joe Paterno wanted. That's all they have to say is Joe Paterno would have wanted this. And half the boosters would be in it. So, because if Michigan and Notre Dame come into like an ACC contract, don't be surprised if Penn State just doesn't show up and they're the 22nd team. Because right now there's 19, right? So if Notre Dame and Michigan join, that'd be 21. That's kind of weird, but you could do 7-team like pods. There's not enough West teams though. So it's kind of weird. Unless you put Michigan and Notre Dame in like a Western pod, which actually they both might want anyway, so they can recruit California. Which would be crazy. And would definitely be a shot to the Big Ten too. If they're like, you guys think you're going to recruit LA? UCLA doesn't matter. Like, Michigan's going to play Stanford and whatever other team down there. Perfect. Let's go head to head and see what happens. You'd have one national conference where then they would be in every state, right? The ACC would be in every major recruiting ground because Michigan and Notre Dame are close enough to Ohio that they would be in California for sure. Michigan gets enough kids from Ohio that they're eating that into there. And then they would have Texas from SMU, and they would have Florida locked down with Miami and Florida State. I don't think the SEC would want that. So they're probably reaching out to Michigan too to see what's up. Say, hey, what's up, guys? What are you doing? Because the last thing I heard, this is my last thought, is Remember how I kept saying like the Big Ten shared research money? And that was a big thing on how schools made extra money. And everyone kept telling me, no, that's not a real thing. You know how many people the past week have told me when I said Michigan might leave? And they're like, do you think they're going to give up that research money? I thought it didn't exist. I thought that was in my mind. Because like, oh, because they would still be in the AAU. Because North Carolina's in it. And Stanford's in it. Like, they're not going to get kicked out just because they're not playing Big Ten football anymore. I think that would open a lot of schools up, and then they would start to shut their mouth. Because if they want Ohio State to be in the lead, then let Ohio State be in charge of the conference. Let it be a one-trick pony conference and let the other powers leave and share playoff bids with the ACC or SEC. I don't care. I hear people laughing like, Michigan will only win 8 games there. It's like, why? What makes you think that? They're not going to be playing the top teams every year. Look at the SEC schedule. They only play an 8-game schedule anyway. Like, you'd probably have 2 losses and be in the playoffs every year. What's the difference? What's the difference between now and then? So, that's my final thought. You have anything you want to talk about?
No, I mean, I just wanted to see continued football season. Continue to have something meaningful to play for. We have playoffs. We have the Steelers in contention. We have the Noles in contention. We have Liberty, still undefeated, going to raise a banner.
Not
James Chadwell.
Not if my dream comes and Michigan leaves the Big Ten because they can't play in the championship game, and then they schedule JMU and Liberty, and they have their own playoff. That's what they need. That's what we need. If Liberty could beat them, then they could really raise the banner and no one could complain.
They can raise it.
That's like that. Honestly, that's what I'll write that in my next thing. I'll write that to the AD. I'll say, hey, you know what we should do? We should play Liberty and JMU because JMU is not allowed to play either. If Michigan can't play in the Big Ten championship game because that's supposed to be the next step, if Michigan doesn't get in line and do whatever, like they're going to fire Connor Stallions again. We already did that. I don't know what else they want us to do. Right?
It's like, fire them even harder.
It's like, take his vacuums and smash them like on Office Space. Let's play some Ghetto Boys and smash all his vacuums. Then that'll teach him. Michigan should just take the Big Ten logos off. Go independent. I don't even care. Like, what's the worst thing? Oh, Michigan falls behind. Like, if they're really driving ratings that much, they can get any conference they want. The Big Ten would invite him back in a heartbeat. If the money drops, and like all those schools that haven't joined yet are like, you know what? Let's go form a Pac-8 instead. Because they could very easily do that. 4 teams, they come and get the next 2, and they grab Boise State and someone else. And they form a Pac-8. They're trying to cut the playoffs down from 6 teams to 5 auto bids too. That helps Michigan if we leave. Why not? So, thanks for listening. The numbers have been great. I know it's probably due to the controversy. People want to laugh at me or whatever. So, keep them coming. And hopefully, this wraps up so I can quit talking about it. And we will see you next week.